Good afternoon. Great to have you guys here. This is going to be fun. Keynote this morning is pretty good, right? Yes. Well, I hope that I can continue the fun here for the next 50 minutes or so, walking you through a bunch of different things. I'm going to show you a lot of services. I'm going to show you a lot of code in Visual Studio. It's going to be a lot of fun. So let me just kind of jump right into it. My focus today is going to be application modernization. I'm really trying to walk you through how you take an application that's sitting on premises and walk through the steps that's going to get you to be able to take advantage of a lot of the cool technology you saw this morning and a lot of additional cool technology that I'm going to show you today. And it can be kind of a challenging process. It can be a little bit onerous. There can be a lot of new concepts as part of it. And my goal today is kind of walk you through those, explain some of those, and actually do some of the actual changes here right in front of you. So without further ado, let me kind of jump in. So step one, what is the value? Like, you're hearing a lot, okay, I'm going to optimize things. I want to modernize things. And sure, that sounds great. Modern is always better, I guess, than not modern. But what is the point, right? What are we doing? Why are we doing this? Well, I think there's two big categories of why we're doing this. The first being, really, how can you accelerate the things that you're doing? How can you speed things up? How can you make changes faster? And it kind of fits into two categories. One is agility, and one is time to market. And agility is really all about how are you making changes quickly, right? How are you going to go in and go make updates, improve your service, listen to customer feedback and respond, right? How are you going to go make those changes in a very quick way without necessarily taking down your service? And this has been one of the challenges historically of services running on premises or services running in a very monolithic way. It's very, very hard to make small changes. Right, and so you have to make your changes in sort of big, gigantic, huge processes. A big test pass needs to be run, right? And so you can't really make those incremental changes. And so part of this process is how can you get it to you so you can make changes in a much faster, simpler, and quicker way. The other, of course, is time to market. It's not just around making changes, but actually getting new things out, getting them into your customers' hands, getting them into the end solution, and making sure that you're getting that result quickly. And this is something, even in Azure, we've sort of learned over the last 6 years how to do this, how to make sure when we ship a service, we're getting feedback on it very, very quickly. And so that's a big part of how you modernize and can think about these types of changes and solutions. The other half, of course, is all about cost, right? And I actually prefer the first half. I love the sort of getting things out quicker and responding quicker, but certainly cost should not be forgotten. How can you reduce your cost? How can you take advantage of services that are going to not only reduce your actual running bottom line, but your management costs? How are you going to reduce the time that you need to spend to manage virtual machines, to manage those databases? How can you reduce that and minimize that as much as possible? And then, of course, just simplification, which is sort of a different way to think about cost. How can you make it so you've got a more standard environment that your IT team is managing? How can you make it so it's a simpler environment? So basically, the development can focus on the app, and the IT can focus on the underlying solution, and you can basically create that cleaner barrier as necessary. Or, obviously, with DevOps, you can do both in a very simple way and be able to pipe that through your system. So this is really the value of what we're getting at. And the hard part here is it's sort of a daunting task, as I mentioned. Obviously, we have three developers here, one much more attractive than the other two. The changes that are required, you may not have the luxury to go learn an entire new system or build an entire new app, right? You've got a big app, you want to go take what you've got and build on top of it. You may have to use some existing code. You may have to use that as part of your solution. And do you really need to learn a bunch of new stuff? Right, and so how can you take advantage of the things you already know, the experiences you already know? You're comfortable, let's say, with Visual Studio and .NET. How do you take advantage of these things to be able to deploy in this way? And that's kind of what I'm going to try and show you today. So we've sort of come up with a little bit of a model here on how to think about this progression. And a lot of this has actually been based on customer conversations that I've had on taking an existing app that's running on premises and moving it all the way through the system. How do you get there? Right? And is it just, again, rewrite the entire app? Typically, no. Right? That's a pretty challenging thing to do. It can break things. It can require a long time to roll out. So it does end up being a few steps. And the first step certainly is being more of a, let's just lift and shift and get it into the cloud. right? Because once you're in the cloud, then you sort of remove a lot of the latency problems that you're going to have using other the services in the cloud, right? You can remove those as problems when you start adding additional capabilities, serverless capabilities, adding additional managed databases, and so on. So getting those virtual machines up in the cloud is a fine first step, right? And so doing that first lift and shift, take the app as is, get it into virtual machines, it allows sort of the rest of the steps to run through pretty much more cleanly. And that's kind of that first lift and shift. Now, the next step here, cloud optimize, is sort of something that I've been talking a little bit about. In some ways, it's just containerizing your app. It's a fine and actually a very good next step. You take that lift and shift, and really all you do is you convert most of it to containers. And so it's actually a great step. You're not yet microservicizing it. I just made up that word right now, but it's a good one. You are just dropping exactly the services that you've got into containers, and you get a ton of benefit from that. And I'm going to walk you through that. It just, you can build it then into your pipelines and flow, and so that's a huge positive step. And then the final step here is modernizing. This is taking advantage of some cloud-native technologies and solutions. Some of the things you saw this morning, serverless Cosmos DB, taking advantage of SQL DB or Postgres or MariaDB, right? Being able to take advantage of these modern-based solutions as part, either an append or a replace for your existing app. And so this flow is a very common expected flow. Now, we see a lot of people skip steps. And so certainly there's a lot of arrows here to allow you to skip steps, either go straight, again, all the way through to Cloud Optimize, go straight to App Modernize. That's fine. There's no right or wrong way to do this. And some of the things that I'm going to try and show you today is really focused on this is your own pace. And in fact, not even just your pace, it's the app's pace. Some apps will be very conducive to skipping straight ahead. Some are going to take a little bit more work or a little bit harder, more time for you to be able to walk through these steps. And so the goal is that we're giving you tools and capabilities to walk you through that whole process. All right, so let's start with the first one. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on lift and shift. I love infrastructure, but I'm going to focus on the other steps here. But this lift and shift is, like I said, there's no re-architecture of code. This is drop it into a VM and go. Very little effort. You can use migration tools. You can use our database migration tool to get these running up inside Azure managed instances, as you heard this morning. Basically, a full lift and shift, and away you go. Very, very similar, exact no code changes, similar experience that you're running on premises, just VMs and Azure. And the value is smaller, just candidly. You're getting a lot less benefit here. You are getting some benefit, which I'll show you, but it's smaller. You're doing manual patching. It's still infrastructure. And you're not getting automated app scaling or that high availability in an automated way, right? So there is some of those limitations. And so the app that I'm going to walk you through the entire demo process is a very simple app. It's a web front end. And it's running a service tier, WCF, underneath. And it's got a data tier. It's running SQL VM in the data tier. And as part of this, the first step, as I'm going to show you, is a pretty quick here. I'm just going to turn it into a VM and go, right? And I'm actually not going to walk you through the full migrate step because it's actually more interesting to talk about the code in the second half. But let me show you just a little bit of what I'm looking at here. Okay. So first, let me orient you to this application. This is the Smart Hotel. I'm sure you saw plenty of this morning. I'm sure you love this app so far. This is a different part of the app, though. So this is the registration side of the app. So this is what they'd see, let's say, at the front desk, or this is what they'd see. You can check this sort of offline and sort of see who's registered, what their address is, their ID. You even have passport numbers in here. These are not real people, so there's no identity theft possible at this point. I know, you guys are taking pictures. And so here you see, it's sort of got, you know, Smart Hotel. You can click in, you can sort of see the experience. And so, you know, pretty simple app. To deploy this, I've actually already run this in virtual machines, excuse me. So this is already running in virtual machines here, and I'm going to show you the Azure portal and what this looks like. And so this is my resource group here. Very, very simple. I've got a set of virtual machines. I've spun up a virtual network to be able to connect them. I've got a SQL server here. And so a couple of disks with that SQL server, right? So there's that. And then I've also got my web server here running. And so, you know, pretty simple. And some of the benefits that I get right away, right? I can click in here and I can take a look at this running web server. And I can get a bunch of metrics built into the system, right? So this is right away sort of free benefit by moving into the cloud. You can see I've got some experience. Looks like people have been hitting the site more as of late, and so you can sort of see the usage rates are going up. And I can even take these and, you know, let's pin them on my dashboard so that I can go find it later. If I find that I'm running underutilized, I can change my size right here. So there is still benefits right away from doing this simple lift and shift. The benefits really add up when you get to the later parts of the changes. And so if I click here, you can see I basically added this to my dashboard. And so now I can get a really nice, clean view on this dashboard. I can share this dashboard with other colleagues of mine. So this first step really helps me with my being able to manage the virtual machines in an easy way, be able to manage my metrics in a simple way, and gives me a little bit of that agility. I can spin things up quick and up and down pretty quickly, so I am still getting some benefit even from this first step. But like I said, there's lots more here to come. So that's the app running in virtual machines. Okay. And of course, deployment there would just use your standard web deploy, your standard SQL deploy, like all of those expectations are the same. Okay, the next step after your lift and shift, that's the simplest. Your lift and shift then comes this cloud optimized. And this is really about containerizing the app. How do you convert that running virtual machine application into containers and then running them in the cloud? Okay, and so this is a great step forward. This is no re-architecting, no new code, right? So you're still just containerizing the code you've already got. It gives you the opportunity for some increased density. Right, so you can come in and you can pack these things a little bit tighter than you used to be packing. You can get lower deployment costs because you can run through a bunch of tooling now because you're just using Docker containers, which are pretty standard across a bunch of tooling. So some of the VSTS work that you saw this morning from Donovan, all of that basically lights up as soon as you start moving over into that container world. It does increase that productivity and give you a lot more agility just moving to containers. And of course, you've got that portability now. These containers can deploy anywhere. They can deploy in any service. And they do enable a lot more flexibility. The con is that it is an additional step. And certainly, you're not getting the full benefit of the managed services that the rest of the platform has to offer. And so it is still an interim step as you make this progression. And so let me just start off and orient you a little bit on, you know, first, what are containers? And I'm going to spend just a one-minute break on that because it is something that's worth just sort of internalizing as we move forward and why they're becoming such an important part of this overall transition. So virtual machines, the key thing with virtual machines, they fully virtualize the OS, right? So when you're deploying a virtual machine, whether you're deploying it yourself or you're deploying on Azure, the full OS is there. Right, so it's running, it has to be created, it has to be booted, right? So starting a virtual machine takes, you know, a minute if it's Linux, a little bit longer if it's Windows, and so it has to boot up, you have to configure it, you have to set it up, right? And so those are kind of the expectations when you're running virtual machines. Containers have changed this game quite a bit in that the OS is now shared. So you now have a shared OS across a bunch of applications. Right, and so when your app starts, it no longer needs to spin up an OS. The OS is running. The OS that it's going to use is the one that's running at the host level, and it's just going to take advantage of that. So this is why containers start in seconds versus minutes. It's also why you get a lot of density. There's no duplication of that OS, right? So VMs, you have the OS every time. You have a bunch of overhead to manage the virtual hardware. With this, you don't, right? You're virtualizing at the OS layer, which means that OS ends up actually being no longer wasted space, right? You're being able to take that density of that reduced OS and being able to deploy. And this is why they're faster. This is why they're more dense. And then the fact that they've become a standard, right? The way that Docker works as a standard now allows this to basically this portability, both across services, but also across clouds and across entire environments, right? So being able to convert to a container and deploy on-prem, deploy in Azure, deploy on Service Fabric, deploy on Kubernetes, deploy in AWS, deploy in Azure, all of these end up becoming this portability that really simplifies that entire story. And so this is what has made containers so exciting. Now, as part of that portability, we support containers across a bunch of different services. We support it across our batch service to be able to do jobs. We support it in our web app service. You saw that this morning in the demo. Service Fabric, which actually I'm going to show you, which offers a comprehensive platform for microservices and containers. AKS, which you also saw this morning. This is our managed Kubernetes service. And ACI, which is a new service that we recently launched called Azure Container Instances. And these also support containers natively, and so you can deploy these across any of these environments. Now, you may be saying, great, Corey, but which one do I use, and why do you have so many for me to pick from? Well, I'm glad that you asked me that, because now I'm going to answer that question. And so let me start off by just explaining a little bit of what a couple of these services are. So Azure Container Instances, this is new, this is innovative, no one else has done this. We do expect other folks to possibly do this, but it really is a pure container service. There is no virtual machine management involved. You are deploying containers with a single command, right? You're spinning them up, spinning them down, and they're going in seconds, and there is, again, there's no infrastructure at all to manage. So the orchestrators that we talked about, Kubernetes, Service Fabric, these have infrastructure that's being managed underneath them. This has no infrastructure. We take care of that, right? And so this allows you to spin up these containers really, really fast in a very simple way. It's a great way to do kind of dev test experiences. It's a great way to do very simple scale-out applications. But the key thing is it does have some limitations. So as mentioned, there's no infrastructure to manage. Very fast start and stop, very fast scale without any VM startup time. So seconds in, seconds out, right? And so you can do a lot of that scaling. But the problem is for any sort of complex app, you're going to hit some challenges. And this is where the orchestrators really become powerful. And so when you look at something like Kubernetes or something like Service Fabric, the difference here is these give you more control over placement. You can start deciding where your containers go. So I talked about that density story. When the containers are just ACI, you don't really care about density. You're just leaving it to us and say, just deploy, make it cheap, right? That's sort of what you're saying with ACI. With the orchestrators, you now get to control that. So you really get to optimize your cost and your app as part of this. You also get that effective resource utilization and application co-location. This is an important one. If you're like, look, these two parts of my app need to talk to each other. I want to make sure that they're always deployed together. You can now do that with these orchestrators, which ACI, you have no control over that because you don't see the VM at all. And so if you look at the placement of containers on an orchestrator, you're selecting maybe that you are going to deploy them across this set of virtual machines. You're going to pick this placement to make sure you're utilizing the resources. And then you may say these two always need to deploy together. And that type of control is possible. And so this is the big difference, right? I think if you've got a complex app with these types of rules and expectations, you're going to want to use one of the orchestrator platforms, one of the managed service platforms. If you're just looking to scale up, you want to take a look at a container, you're looking to do sort of a blanket scale of containers, ACI is going to be a better solution for you because then you have nothing else to manage underneath. And so that's kind of a good distinction between these two. So let me actually dig in a little bit to Service Fabric because that's what I am going to use for my demo today. You saw AKS this morning with the managed Kubernetes. I'm going to show you Service Fabric. Service Fabric is a little bit different than what Kubernetes is offering in that it can deploy containers, and I'm going to show you that. It can serve as a container orchestrator. But the real benefit of Service Fabric is going higher in the stack. So the benefits that you get with Service Fabric is you can add additional microservices on top in a native way, right? And so you can combine container-based deployments, you can combine brand new microservice services and have them all sitting together on that same managed infrastructure. And so it makes it really easy to take the step from containerize to modernize in a very, very quick way with Service Fabric. And that's a little bit unique in what we're doing with Service Fabric as compared to other solutions out there. Windows and Linux supported as containers, stateless and stateful-based solutions supported. And of course, you can deploy Azure Stack. You can even take Service Fabric and deploy on other clouds. You can deploy it on premises. You can deploy it on VMware. All of that is possible and supported as part of the solution. Okay, and so all of this is held together by Visual Studio. And so this is what I'm going to show you as part of the demo. It's all led with Visual Studio experiences, giving you that experience that you're used to. It can do integrated Docker tooling. It can deploy, debug, test. It is a full end-to-end experience for developing and deploying container-based applications. And so let me tell you what I'm going to do to the app. So I did this lift and shift. It's now running in IaaS, okay, and great, and I love it. But now I'm going to use Visual Studio to help me containerize the app and deploy it into Service Fabric. And also, at the very end, I'm going to also convert it over into a SQL DB solution instead of running as part of just a VM with SQL. Okay, and so let me actually dig in here spin over. And let's see here. Okay. So first things first, I want to show you this so you don't think I'm cheating on how easy this is. The first thing that I'm going to show you, little PowerShell, right? Everyone loves little PowerShell. Don't you? Who doesn't like PowerShell? Okay, anyway. The reason why I'm showing you this, there's a lot of ways to spin up a Service Fabric cluster. The rest of the demo assumes this cluster is running, right? And so I've got a cluster that I'm going to be running later on, but let me just start here. And so the PowerShell that I've got here, this spins up a Service Fabric cluster, and it spins up an Azure Container Registry for me. So it's literally two or three commands here to go create this, along with a bunch of parameters, and I can go spin this up, and very, very quickly, I have this Service Fabric cluster to go play with, right? And so this is just to show you how simple this is to get that hosted infrastructure ready to roll. It's really just a few commands. I'm picking my cluster size, I'm picking my password, and so on, and away this will go. Now, instead of waiting for that to actually come up here, I'm going to go ahead and go to one that's actually already been deployed here. And so let me start here with this application. So just to show you what I've got in this application here, I've got a web portion of the app, and I've got a WCF portion of the app. So pretty simple. This is pretty much what you'd expect for a solution like this. And just as quickly as I can click a couple buttons, there is Docker support for Service Fabric right here in the portal. Let's see if I can zoom in on that. So you can see that it's basically right here in this experience that I can go and configure that and then lose it because I zoomed in. Let me go back and just click that, and away I go. All right? And so I'm adding that to the web portion. And it's going to spin up an application aspect of this. So let me get that rolling here. And then let me go to the WCF and do the same thing. Go to the WCF and do the same thing here. So I'm adding it to both. Okay? And so as part of that simple step, a few things that this is doing, right, automatically for me. This is going to go in, and it's going to create a Docker file for me, okay? And so I can go in, and this wasn't here before. And so this Docker file is basically telling me how I'm going to build these containers. So this is taking this code that I built, I've changed nothing, and now this is going to convert it to a container. And it's super simple, right? It's taking basically this ASC.NET container that we've already got in our repository, in the Microsoft repository in Docker Hub, taking specific version, building on top of it, putting my code in, and I've got my container ready to roll. A couple other things that this does. One, it sets up a service manifest for me. So this is the manifest that is telling me how to configure that container when it deploys on Service Fabric. So I can pass in environment variables if I want to, and pass those through right here in the system. I can also configure different aspects of the registration, the ports open, endpoints open, all of that available right there. And then the other thing that's created for me is the application manifest. And this one's pretty cool in that just kind of here at the top, you can see I'm now able to, for each one of these, decide, one, what's my instance count, right? So I'm going to start with one, right? But if I want to, I can spin up right here in this. I can say 3, 5, 10, whatever I want, and it'll deploy it that way. But even more interestingly, because these are Windows containers, I also can control the isolation. So this allows me to say, look, do kind of the standard Windows containers so they get really, really dense. I can also say deploy Hyper-V-based containers, which gets me a bit more isolation. It gives me a bit more of that virtual control of that individual container, so attacks across containers are not actually possible, and it a little bit less dense, and I can control that right here in the Visual Studio experience. And so I can configure that and set that up. And so now that I've got that up and running, I simple publish here. And this is going to basically go into my Azure account, and find Service Fabric endpoints that I've already created, right? And so it comes in, and I can just go in and right-click here and say, great, I've already created one, and you can see the one that I actually just launched is here. But you can see I can pick whatever one I want, and then I can pick the Azure Container Registry that I've also created. And then with that, I hit publish, this app's up and running, right? So that simple, no code, no changes, and I'm ready to containerize my application. So let me actually go back and show you just what this looks like. Okay? And so this is already running here. I've actually already done the deploy. So this is already running here, and this is what the Service Fabric management experience looks like. So I've got these containers deployed, and you can see I've got two services deployed here. And so one is, of course, the web portion, and one is the WCF portion. So they're up and running. I've got a single instance of each one. And then to show you sort of what this looks like from the benefit, the agility you're getting by containerizing the app, If I just hit go and scale service here, and let me zoom in so you can see this. So now with this single click here, I can go in and say, I want 3 of these, I want 5 of these, right? And because they're containers, they start up incredibly fast, right? And so, the VMs are already up and running. I hit scale service. This is going to get configured. It's going to get deployed. And within a matter of seconds, it can take more traffic, right? And so that is really one of the big benefits now of containerizing this. My tool chain is all unified, and I can do that type of scale and agility in a really, really simple and fast way. And just to kind of show you, this is the app running. You can see it's sort of a very similar app, a very similar experience. But if I kind of zoom in here, you can see that the actual endpoint is our container endpoint. So this app is up and running, ready to go with containers, more or less as you were sitting here, with a few shortcuts. All right. Let me go back here to my demo. My slides. Okay. So now I've shown you how to convert this into containers. I want to talk a little bit about some other container solutions, right? So you saw the AKS solution. I'm talking about Service Fabric right now. But it's worth taking a moment and saying there are a lot of container solutions out there. And they all end up serving a different value, different needs. They're different customers that are looking forward to those solutions. So DCOS, a partnership with Mesosphere that we've had a long time. Customers like Esri, Verizon, BioCatch running their services on this. Many of them having data and container-based solutions running on top. And so we've seen a lot of excitement around that with the overall universe that's offered there. It's very easy to get deployed big data services on top of DCOS. Pivotal, Manulife, Ford, these guys are deploying on top of Pivotal. It's very focused on Java and Java Spring. And so obviously all the things I'm showing you today are very .NET focused. We've seen a lot of Java love over towards Pivotal. And in fact, I'll mention something around more of .NET support coming there as well. OpenShift, as well, then this ends up being sort of a Red Hat enterprise version of Kubernetes, and so fully managed by Red Hat, and we've seen a lot of excitement from customers, folks like Hitachi and Link by Net. These customers are looking forward to getting sort of that great support experience from Red Hat as part of it. And then, of course, Docker Enterprise. This is something we've had a long-standing relationship with Docker, and we've seen a lot of exciting efforts. Probably one of the largest that we've seen has been MetLife is deploying a very large solution on top of Docker Enterprise, on top of Azure. In fact, we've seen so much excitement around this. We have a dedicated program between us and Avanade and Docker to be able to help move your applications into Docker Enterprise. It's called the MTA program, which is a modernized traditional apps program. And so very apropos of the overall session. So I like to talk about all these because there is choice, there is variability. I'm focusing on one service today, but certainly all of these are fantastic services on top of Azure. And one I wanted to just mention just quickly and focus a little bit more on, an announcement that I get to make. Scott didn't take all of them. I get to make one. And this is the fact that Steeltoe is actually joining the .NET Foundation. So the .NET Foundation, if you're not familiar, is basically the open source foundation for .NET. And Steeltoe is a project that's been worked on for quite some time, focused on resilient .NET microservices. And so Steeltoe open source is going to be joining the foundation. It's going to enable .NET Core, .NET Foundation, framework-based solutions to be able to deploy in conjunction with things like Netflix Eureka or Cloud Foundry, similar to what I talked about here in the previous slide with Pivotal, or even Spring Cloud, Spring Cloud configuration server. So all of these are possible, and so very exciting to have Steeltoe join the .NET Foundation. All right. So those are, of course, other ways to be able to containerize your solution. Let me now go and focus on app modernization. And this is kind of a big, expansive area of things that you can do to take your app to the next level, right? So I showed you the exact same app. It moves forward. It containerizes. You get a lot of agility from that. But really, this is where the agility takes off and really starts to see a lot more motion. And so let me kind of dig into what this looks like. So this is really about using modern services. This is about using things like our serverless platform with Azure Functions or Logic Apps. It's about using Cosmos DB for global NoSQL database solutions. It's about using some of our managed database solutions like SQL DB or MySQL or Postgres. So this is a big, big step forward. It does take code changes, and this is what I'm going to walk you through here in this next step here. So first, let me explain a couple of these platforms. One, our serverless platform. This is an awesome set of technologies. So serverless, if you're not familiar with sort of serverless or what the term has typically meant, it's really focused on event-based programming, right? It's really focused on an event fires and code runs, executes, and is done, right? And so serverless platforms have that ability to run based on events. They run with micro-billing, so they basically run for exactly, they bill you for exactly the usage and, in fact, exactly the memory that you use. So it's not even down to a VM level. And the integration with other platforms is super key as part of this. And so our full platform consists of an eventing solution. So EventGrid allows you to take events from many, many sources, right? You can take every time a VM is created, fire an event. Every time you drop something in storage, fire an event. Every time someone tweets, you saw that with functions this morning, fire an event. And so all of these basically pipe through your event code and EventGrid as a service. You can even make it your own events. You can make your code fire an event with EventGrid, and that basically turns into a serverless pipeline. Then on the other side is who's going to listen and take action, right? And EventGrid also gives you this flexibility. You can make Azure Functions as a serverless coding development platform. You can fire off some code. Logic Apps is more of a workflow serverless platform, and I'm going to show you that here in my demo. But you can send this to anything. So you can send this to any service that you want to listen to these events. So this flexibility is huge. You can write services yourself. You can write services that cross clouds. EventGrid gives you this connecting glue that allows you to do that in a simple way and a very, very fast way. Now, as part of this, Azure Functions, as I mentioned, this is really focused on development of serverless code. It's really focused on being able to write some code, fire it based on an event. And the exciting thing, which I'm going to show you, is being able to develop, debug, and deploy all from Visual Studio. So again, you don't have to go into the portal and do the work there. You can do it right in Visual Studio, right next to the other work I've already done. You can also do it in Visual Studio for Mac, and that's a recent addition as well to be able to do that there. And of course, with Visual Studio Team Services, you can do CI/CD too. So you can do all of your integration, your builds, and your deployments all through VSTS and using GitHub as part of that code storage. So this is a really great development solution for serverless applications. But the one that actually I love to talk about and I'm going to show you in the demo is Logic Apps. So this is a workflow serverless tool. So we've got the code side of serverless, and now we've got the workflow side where you can integrate this with a bunch of services. So you can, with a few clicks, you can integrate it with Twitter. You can integrate it with ServiceNow. You can integrate it with Office 365. Right? It makes it incredibly easy for you to take events from outside sources, pipe them through, take some action against them, and then pipe them somewhere else. Right? And so this workflow experience, it can work with functions, it can work without functions, right? You can do it all on your own. And that experience is really, really valuable to being able to do quick changes. In fact, one part of the demo that I'm going to show you, we drafted up actually just yesterday. We sort of said, oh gosh, we should add something. If anyone follows me on Twitter, you saw me testing this. And so I'm going to show you it actually today, but we've been working on that for the last couple days, for the last day or two. And so also with integrated Visual Studio test tooling on that one. And then sort of the last portion here as part of sort of this modernize of an application that I wanted to talk through is our cognitive services. This is a super cool set of services. So I'm going to show you how to take Logic Apps and integrate with this. You can now get the power of AI with just a few simple commands. And so this allows things like language analysis, it allows speech analysis, it allows you to do sentiment analysis. Is what someone's saying positive or negative? It can do vision, right? You saw that a little bit in the keynote this morning. It can do search. It's basically allowing you to do a lot of these things that have historically been very hard and very challenging to set up. It allows you to do them in a really simple way using very, very simple REST APIs. And so this is sort of a key component of the overall application that I'm going to show you. Okay, so this last portion of the demo is a long one. It's a lot of changes that I'm going to walk you through, so buckle up. But the key thing here, as I've shown you already, you take an application, lift and shift to cloud, you then containerize it, deploy it in some container manager. I use Service Fabric here, and you'll see why in a little bit. Now, I'm going to start using some of the modern services. So first, I'm going to add Twitter, and I'm going to add that to using Logic Apps. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to come in with Logic Apps, I'm going to listen to Twitter, I'm going to do some logic against it. So you're going to see me do a conditional against it to make sure that not everyone watching can ruin the demo. And so you'll see what I've done there. And then I'm going to drop it into Cosmos DB, right? And so it's basically taking the input and dropping it into Cosmos DB for further usage. From there, I've got functions running that's listening to Cosmos DB. So it's basically looking for a Cosmos DB-based alert that's a part of this, and it's going to then fire this function in an automated way. So the event here is something drops into Cosmos DB. This function's going to fire, do some sentiment analysis on it, and then drop it back into another location in Cosmos DB. So that's kind of that first workflow. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a Service Fabric service that is effectively just pulling in, when it's called, the full list of the Cosmos DB endpoints, right? So all of the data that's in Cosmos DB, it's going to pull in all of those documents and present them out as an endpoint for my website to start using, right? And so that service is basically just a web API that I'm going to go create and add to the rest of my containerized application, taking advantage of that solution. So a lot of things that I'm going to go change here in this next flow. And looks like I talked too long. Okay, great. I thought I had to log back in. Always, it's an indication you've talked too long if your machine goes out. So let me get to this demo, because this is going to be a fun one. So buckle up here. All right. So I'm going to start by, where all good demos start, I'm going to start here in Twitter. So let me just clear this out here. Always a risk to show Twitter, because you don't know what someone has said to you at the top here. It looks like it's my presentation. Oh, that's nice. Look at that. Wow, how cool. Let's zoom in on that. No, just kidding. All right. All right, let me go here. So what I'm going to start here is I'm going to start with a tweet, okay? And so what I've done here is, like I said, I want to go pull these tweets into my registration solution so I can start tracking people's sentiment about the hotel that are staying in my hotel, right? And so I can track that and watch that. And so Corey Smart Hotel is the Twitter tag that I'm going to be looking for. And so I'll warn you, we've protected it, so you guys can all tweet all you want. You're not going to see your stuff. And I'll show you how we did that, because it was all using Logic Apps. And so I'm going to tweet this out and have that kind of walk through the system here. All right. So now let me go over and show you what we've done. So I'm going to start here with Logic Apps. And so if I pull this up, Logic Apps, if you haven't seen this, like I said, it is a full workflow experience. And so it's super easy to go in and add things and make conditionals and so on. And so you can see here what I've done. If I zoom in here, I'm basically saying, look, if I'm getting this Twitter, if I'm getting a tweet with this text in it, Corey Smart Hotel, right, I'm going to check every second, and this is using my Twitter account to look for it, but it doesn't have to go to my Twitter account, right? It can be anything in Twitter that it's looking for. And this is what we've done, and we actually added this just in the last couple days because we started seeing other people's tweets pop in. It basically, I'm putting this protection during test mode that it's got to be tweeted from me, okay? And so this is a condition that we added. Obviously, when I run this in production, I will remove this and make sure sort of all tweets can come through, but right now I'm doing this testing. And then you can see over here, I basically got what I'm doing is, if true, I'm going to create this Cosmos DB endpoint, and it's going to drop this here in this tweets to analyze section of Cosmos DB, and it's basically doing this JSON-based language preparation. Now, I could add functions in here, I could do a bunch of other stuff in here, but right now this is sort of all I've been able to do. All right, and so if I go over and let me go back here and see, and let me go into that Cosmos DB and see if this actually dropped in while we were talking here. Let me go to Data Explorer. So I've got Cosmos DB running here in West US actually. And so I'm going to pull up, and I can basically get a view of all the data that's running in, that's available in my Cosmos DB, and it will show me whether this tweet has come through. It will, I promise. Let me click back in here and see. Oh, there we go. Look at that. All right. So I go documents here and see. Oh, there we go. Looks like it's there. And let's see if this is the tweet that I put in. Let's see. It's loading, I guess. Okay, and so presumably this will be the tweet that I basically put through the system. It is sitting here in the tweets to analyze section of Cosmos DB, so it hasn't yet been executed on. And so it seems to be running quite slow. Let me go to try this one here and see if I can get it to go a little faster. Okay. Maybe just that window. Great. Ah, cool. All right, look at that. All right, so this is the tweet that I put in. I just put it in, and so it's now sitting here in the tweets to analyze section of my document DB. Or excuse me, my Cosmos DB. It's a document in Cosmos DB. All right, so from there, now I need to get this function up and running, okay? And so I have this code. As I mentioned, you can do all of this inside Visual Studio. And so I've got this code running here in Visual Studio. It turns out I didn't actually write this code. So someone else wrote this code and gave it to me. And I'm going to tell you that it's there's some pretty bad stuff in it, or at least one bad thing. But you can see here, just it functions code. It's as you'd expect. It's pretty simple code. You can see here's basically pulling in the CosmosDB trigger. It's pulling in from tweets to analyze. It's going to run some work against it, and then it's going to put it into the tweets folder when I'm done. Okay. And so I know that this is causing problems for me, and it's causing problems because it's it's cutting off a bunch of my tweets. Right, so a bunch of my tweets end up being shorter than I expect. And so to figure this out, I'm actually going to go run this local, as you saw this morning, and I've got breakpoints already set up. Right, and so this is going to run local. I do not want to do that right now. Nice try. And so this is running local. And so the key thing here, this is all event-based. So this is going to wake up, and it's going to immediately say, oh, something's for me to process in this CosmosDB database because it's just sitting there in the tweets to analyze. So once this is up, you're going to see it pop up, and you're probably going to see it jump straight into the debugger because I've got those breakpoints set here. Let's see here. And so it looks like it's still getting rolling here. And so what those breakpoints that I've set, I really want to go kind of jump in and see what does this data look like. So there we go. It's up and running, and it did go break in. Now, just to orient you on what I'm showing, I am showing live debugging right now of functions on my local machine that is pulling from events based on CosmosDB running in the public cloud, right? So this is CosmosDB has something in it. This is now running locally and firing an event for me, okay? And it's got, of course, everything you'd expect, so I can go take a look here and see, okay, there's the doc. You can see this is the doc that I put through, okay? And now I've got a second breakpoint here, and I'm sure many of you are already seeing what the bug is. So I've got a second breakpoint here, and what this is saying is that if the Twitter text length is more than 140, I'm going to cut it off to 140 with the comment, Twitter is never going to support more than 140 characters. Well, unfortunately, we've learned that is not the case, so this code no longer works. So this code is now, of course, truncating anything greater than 140, right? And so if I actually hit continue and play it out, what you can see here, we've commented this out, it's basically going to cut off the rest of that tweet and put it into the CosmosDB, secondary CosmosDB with a much shorter tweet than what I actually put in. It's going to cut it off right at the 140 mark. Okay, so I want to go fix this code. Pretty simple. It's 280, I think, is the new number. And so, like any good developer, instead of actually making it be able to handle more variable sizes, I'm just going to increase the number. So here we go, 280. Wait, make sure you change your comments too, guys. You don't want the next person to get confused about why it broke. All right, save there. I am an awesome developer. All right, now let me hit play again. Now, what's beautiful about this, now I want to test this, right? And I want to test this, and I kind of don't want to go through this whole Logic Apps Twitter thing. So I'm going to go launch this again. But what I'm going to actually do here is I'm going to go straight into my CosmosDB. Whew. All right. And I'm going to actually put in a test sample here. Okay, and so I've got nothing now because it analyzed it. I'm just going to create a new doc that's going to basically force this guy to run. So let's make sure he's running, he's listening. Not yet. Let's just wait a minute here. Okay, great. Now he's running. So now I can just say, great, let's play. Let's save this. And that should then effectively immediately trigger here. The launch. Let's see if I can do that. Let me do update. Perfect. Immediately trigger the launch. Okay, great. So you see it's already triggered it. It's going back into my debugger. If I hit continue, it doesn't hit the second one. My bug is fixed. So that's beautiful. So now I've got the bug fixed. I've got now wired Logic Apps taking from Twitter into CosmosDB. I've now got my function code fixed. Whoever wrote this was silly, and now I've fixed it. Obviously, there may be some other bugs in there, but let's let's step away from that one for now. Please disregard the man behind the curtain. All right, so let's assume that works from now on. And so now I've got this in my new location in Cosmos DB, and so if I go over here and see, let's see, did that actually, oh, that one works, so we're good. So I've got this new location here in Cosmos DB, and this is a second location called Tweets, and so this is now allowing, this is basically the update, and what I've done here and I've added is, as part of that function call, I've now added this sentiment score, right? So now I've added a sentiment score as part of that process, put it into a new Cosmos DB location, and away I go. Now, final step. Now I need to get this into my website, okay? So I've got this sitting in Cosmos DB. Now what am I going to do? Well, super simple to be able to do that. I'm running this already, and so here I've got the application running right now. It's deployed in Service Fabric. It's running as two containers. If I go in and say, great, what I need is a web API that's basically going to be called by my front-end web service, website, to be able to pull the data from Cosmos DB and then allow me to display it in a way that is visually appealing. And so to do that, very, very simple. I've already got this Service Fabric solution running. All I want to do is create a stateless ASP.NET Core solution. I'm going to call it Sentiment. I'm calling it Sentiment Integration is what I'm calling it. Okay. And so I add that and I'm creating a web API here, and so as you'd expect, this is just an ASP.NET 2.0 web API. Like, this is exactly what you'd expect from this. It just can now be deployed into Service Fabric as a microservice, okay? And so if I open this up, as this is kind of finishing here, it's creating this for me on the spot, and so as I open this up, you're going to see the things you'd expect, right? You're going to see the web host configuration. You're going to see the actual values file that I can go and put in the API calls that I want to go configure. And so let's see here. If I go up, where'd it go? Here it is. Okay, great. So if I go in here and I actually click on Sentiment Integration, you can see, as you'd expect, the web host builder right here, no different than what you'd expect from a web API. And then if I go up to values, this is where, of course, I would configure what the operations are that I want this web API to expose, right? And so that's all configured, and this will then just deploy super simple in Service Fabric. Instead of coding it here, I actually happen to have coded it already. So let's get rid of that here and go back to over here. Great. And so I've already got it coded up, and just to show you what this looks like, here you can see I'm basically calling into Cosmos DB, right? And so the get command here, the get for my web API is going to call in Cosmos DB and going to pull all that data out and allow the website to show it in a clean way, okay? And so that's a very, very simple solution, and like I said, able to deploy here directly to Service Fabric again. And so I just hit publish, and I again hit that same endpoint option. I hit that same solution here for the Azure Container Registry. I forgot one step here. I want to also change that my web is going to call, basically my web container needs to call into this. Okay, and so the other change here, as you can see here, I'm basically calling in to this web API, and I'm getting that content. So I'm changing the container. I'm adding this code here to be able to call in and pull this content out. I'm going to then do some fancy stuff here to color it and make it sort of look pretty. But other than that, I'm pulling the data out and I'm going to display it, right? And so again, this is changing the container, and I'm changing and building out that web API. And like I said, I do that single publish experience, and that will then bring it up into Service Fabric as this lift and shift container solution plus this new microservice that can now be updated independently as needed as I continue to make agile changes to my code. And so I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to actually pop up and show you what that looks like. So I've got here now, I've got three services deployed. This guy's running here. I've got, again, that sentiment integration. So this is that web API waiting to hear calls from my front end. I've got the hotel registration. That's my front end. And, of course, the WCF, which I haven't made changes to. And so in an agile way, I've updated two of the three solutions. They're all container-based, and so they all deploy in. And, of course, that third one is a microservice solution, very tiny, very singular function, and allows me to go manage that in a super simple way. And so if I go in here and actually go to this new part of my website called Sentiments and click in. And so you'll see this is a live calling into that new service. And you can see here it's getting that very, very long one after it was fixed. It allows me to go in and take a look at that super long one. It looks like that's a positive score as well. And you can see all these scores are here. Some of them did sneak in here before we fixed the logic app. So looks like someone thought my rooms were lousy. Anyway, so you can see that whole experience built in. And so, to kind of replay what I did, I showed you lift and shift. I showed you how to convert to containers. I showed you how to deploy those containers into a Service Fabric environment, all using Visual Studio. Conversion, deploy, publish, all there in Visual Studio, built in. I then showed you how to take Logic Apps, read from Twitter in whatever fun way you want to, put that into Cosmos DB, run a function, again, coded and debugged in Visual Studio, and then create a microservice listener as part, a web API listener as part of my service that then is being called from my original web front end to be able to show that content. And other than some of the deploy time that I skipped over, pretty much all of this was pretty easy for me to do right here in front of you. So I do still need to figure out what that function was doing, but I'll spend some time maybe afterwards. So all three of those steps done right in front of you. And so this is really exciting. I've shown you this full maturity model. But it's not just a maturity model, it's also a journey. This is going to be a journey for you for your app. It's going to be a journey for you to think through how to make these changes and make these solutions as you go progress into a modern application. And so, looking to get started, you can go try some of these links here, getting started on Azure Get Started or how to migrate to the cloud. We also have the full source code, so if you do find that function bug, let us know. You can go check the source code out here, and you can play with this yourself. And so with that, I want to thank you all. There's also some additional reading material as well that you can go take a look at. But thank you all so much. Have a wonderful Connect, and thank you for spending these last 50 minutes with me.
Shell's overall mission is to be the most innovative and competitive energy company in the world. By 2050, our population is around 9 billion. And for that, we need a lot more energy than we need today. Technology will clearly help Shell in meeting these challenges.
We have about 2,800 software developers working day in, day out.
We're solving really hard problems using vast computing resources and big data. We have high-performance computing, advanced 4D and 5D visualization capability. We support 3 million lines of legacy code that we're moving into a newer technology platform based on ASP.NET. We expect to write another 1 to 2 million lines of code, and so we need a tool that really facilitates good collaboration between those various teams.
Our overall strategy was to move everything to the cloud as soon as we can.
We gathered up our Team Foundation Server databases, sent them off to Microsoft, where they ran their high-fidelity migration processes and transformed it all into Visual Studio Team Services.
I was pretty unenthused when I heard we had to move to Visual Studio Team Services. Any change is hard. The rollout was phenomenal. We were able to just log on, update, move to the new system. I didn't have to rebuild my code. It's just really easy to work with and to quickly see what is my state right now. How am I doing per sprint, per beta, per release? Our product is developed on two platforms, on Windows and on Linux. So we need to make sure that everything we build on Windows will compile on Linux as well. Because Visual Studio Team Services is in the cloud, you can access it from any platform.
Whether it's for Linux, for Windows, for Apple iOS, for Android, for other type of devices. So having access to the latest software releases is very important to us.
The upgrades that we've done over the past are typically pretty disruptive to the business because we have to upgrade the system. Now with Visual Studio Team Services, every 3 weeks there's new functionality without us even noticing it.
We have all of our colleagues accessing the same backlogs, the same user stories, and the test cases are there as well.
We're no longer running our servers. We've removed all of that cost.
Obviously, going to the cloud, people are mostly concerned with security. So the fact that the Visual Studio Team Services had their ISO certification in place was a great benefit for us. Shell is very open about wanting to be innovative and being very competitive. That's basically why we pushed very hard to actually move this to the cloud. We think it's helping our developers a great deal.
Digitalization will transform every part of the company. It will overlay our physical world and make it one world. Whether in the subsurface space, whether we find space, whether in the trading space, whether in the consumer space, it will transform the whole company.
We want to connect people anywhere, anytime.
The bandpass is very important in Huawei. We have 80,000 developers in our company. Huawei's culture is custom focused. So as a development, we should improve our efficiency and develop our product more quickly. I think Visual Studio 2017 is the most powerful IDE in the world. Huawei has the largest code base that Microsoft has ever seen, which is about 1 GB and 24,000 source files.
Because we're just based on C++ in Huawei company, but in the past, we have to install some other components that we don't need. But now we can just choose components we wanted to use. So now we can use Visual Studio to doing continuous integration and deployment. Very convenient.
The employment of intelligences and the developer assistant tools makes the development more productive.
Huawei is an open company. We cooperate with Huawei's partners. We also cooperate with open source.
Visual Studio 2017 can develop Linux software and debug against Linux. This future is very important for us. I like this future very much. It's cool.
It makes cross-platform development easier.
And Microsoft is a developer-centric company. And Huawei, we are beginning to build an engineering culture. So we want to cooperate with Microsoft to improve Huawei's developers' productivity.
Happy birthday, Visual Studio. Visual Studio, 生日快乐! Yeah!
Systematic reviews summarize all the best available research evidence to inform decision making in health. Research had been done that looked at whether steroids were helpful in improving the maturation of premature babies' lungs. The reviews showed conclusively that giving steroids saved lives amongst premature babies, and that has probably saved many thousands of lives.
And for a typical review, we might well have 20,000 citations to sift through as a team.
It can take 2-3 years to complete. Project Transform is an artificial intelligence project that brings together the technology that's able to manipulate and analyze data very efficiently.
We've been able to create a data set that can train the machine to help us do this task so that we can then better direct human effort where it's most needed.
We're using Cortana Intelligence to enable us to develop and deploy these machine learning applications in the cloud. We've got a series of different classifiers where we narrow the scope of what a particular citation is looking at. What we're able to do is to be able to identify the research which is likely to be relevant for a particular review. I'm using Azure Machine Learning Studio to develop and deploy web services which make these classifiers available. We're then able to visualize the performance of the classifier across the set of studies. We find most of the relevant citations much, much earlier in the process.
What I love about all of this is that it's all about that partnership between the human and the machine.
Artificial intelligence will allow us to answer more complex questions more efficiently and with more precision, improving decision making and therefore helping patient health.
We wanted to make it really easy for our customers to get meaning out of their data.
A lot of industries have data, but they haven't been actually able to make the data work for them.
Any producer is competing against great competitors from around the world, so they constantly need to innovate to do more with less.
Shelby is FactoryTalk Analytics for Devices.
Shelby actually allows us to put a data scientist in a box.
It is an information appliance that our customers can deploy in their manufacturing operation to analyze the data that's coming out of the device.
We use Microsoft Cognitive Services to train the bot. This also uses machine learning. We're pushing up every event that Shelby sees and doing summary calculations in Power BI.
Great Lakes Brewery was one of our first beta customers.
We were able to help them by finding out how their assets were performing, how healthy they were, and allowing them to do it in as easy a fashion as possible.
Implementing Shelby was super easy. It took about 3 minutes, a couple of mouse clicks, and we were analyzing problems that we were then able to solve immediately. Technology allows our brewers and other process individuals to stay focused on the craft of the product rather than the process.
Most of our customers don't know that they need Shelby until they get Shelby. One of the things that we've been experimenting with is attaching the bot to a voice interface like Microsoft's Cortana.
There are two drives that need maintenance.
So a customer can find out the status of their system, no matter where they are, without taking their hands off their work. When we show our customers, jaws drop. People are astounded by the bot.
Being able to use the Microsoft bot framework to make our product as easy to use as possible has just been amazing. It is a infrastructure that we can use immediately. We don't have to set up our own cloud computing infrastructure. Azure does all that for us. We can put our own industry knowledge on top of it and make our customers more productive.
Our customers are seeing a new Rockwell. New innovation with Microsoft is showing them that we are evolving to create positive outcomes for their businesses.
All of the devices are online, and there are three that need maintenance.
Yeah, I think I may actually need the hot water there. I don't think it's hot anymore.
It's warmish, I'll grab
it. Are you warm it?
They have a thing that you can slide in.
You wanna sit, Ma?